country music veteran Bill Anderson was born in Columbia, South Carolina, but he found his voice in Georgia. He graduated with a degree in journalism from the University of Georgia and went on to spend the next 50 years becoming one of the most successful singer-songwriters in country music history, or in music history, period. He was inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame in 2001, and his new memoir is titled Whisperin' Bill Anderson, An Unprecedented Life in Country Music. Bill will perform at the Social Circle Theater in Social Circle, Georgia, Thursday night, and he's my guest this morning. It's such a pleasure. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me, Celeste. Good to see you.
So this is your second memoir, because what happened in the 90s was this shocking development. Well, was it shocking to you when you suddenly had a resurgence of activity in the music business?
Well, I wrote my first autobiography in 1989. I thought it was over. I had spent about 30 years in the country music business, and I thought, well, I've run out of things to say. Nobody's interested in me anymore. I'm just an old dinosaur in the music business, so I'll run away and start doing game shows on television and soap operas and things like that. And then, lo and behold, about 5 years after I thought it was all done and finished, I had this resurgence in my career, particularly as a songwriter, and began this new thing for me called co-writing. I had never done much of that.
Writing with someone else.
Yes, I had written most of my songs by myself. I discovered co-writing. I discovered a whole new career. And I guess the unprecedented part that comes in the title of the book is the fact that not anybody else that I know of has really done that, had 30 pretty good years and took about 10 years off and then come back and actually had a more fruitful career the second time.
Let's hear the song that may have sort of helped kickstart the second half. This is Tips of My Fingers, recorded by Steve Wariner. It became a number one hit in 1992 in the country charts. That's 32 years after you originally recorded. In fact, your version hit the charts when Steve Wariner was only 5 years old.
I reached out my arms and I touched you with soft words. I whispered your name. I came. My eyes had a vision of sweet lips yielding beneath my
You then began a very successful collaboration with Vince Gill. What did you have to change? When you say that you didn't, you know, you thought you were a dinosaur, did you have to change your songwriting style all that much?
You know what I've discovered? People actually write songs in the daytime. See, I thought all country songs had to be written at 2 a.m. with the shades pulled down, the lights low, and you get in as miserable a mood as you can get in. But I come to find out that these guys who've come to town in recent years and who are doing so much of the country songwriting today, co-writing and all, they make appointments to write at 10 o'clock in the morning. They drink coffee. I mean, this
you
was a whole
whiskey
new
or beer.
You said that, I didn't.
I read your memoir, remember. Let's hear your first hit.
And oh, golly, do we have to?
We do. This is actually the very famous Ray Price singing City Lights. And you wrote this when you were 19 years old and working as a DJ in Commerce, Georgia.
The glow of
So when you listen back to some of those early songs, do you ever get the temptation to tinker? To say, gee, I wish I'd fixed this or changed that word?
Not so much in my songs. I do my own records. I cannot stand to listen to my old records. Every time I hear one, I think, why didn't I do that one more time? I could have done it a lot better. But when I hear Ray Price sing City Lights, I just sit back and grin and think, boy, I must be the luckiest guy in the world.
So you were 19 years old when you wrote that. Did you know right away when you finished it, boy, this could be a hit?
No. I wrote it up on top of a little three-story hotel in Commerce. I was in Commerce last night, by the way, and had a wonderful visit with a lot of old friends. And we talked about that night I went up on top of that little three-story hotel, looked up at the stars. There weren't but two or three traffic lights in Commerce. And I wrote "The Bright Array of City Lights as Far as I Can See." My dad said he knew I was going to make it if I had the imagination to look at Commerce, Georgia, and call it a great white way.
Well, since you mentioned your own singing, let's hear you singing. This is a song that I imagine most people will recognize. This is your hit "Still," and you're singing here a live performance on a TV program.
No, and I'm trying to figure out where you took that from. I haven't sung that high in 20 years.
Your songs are not easy to sing. I mean, some of them are quite challenging, which lends itself to some of the gorgeous voices that have sung them. But I wonder, going back to this song in particular, "Still," what change do you think it makes that you're a singer-songwriter as opposed to somebody who's just writing songs for other people?
Well, I think when you're a singer-songwriter or an artist-songwriter, you interpret the song the way that you heard it when you wrote it. I've written a lot of songs that other people have recorded, and they've come back to me, some marvelous records. I mean, I'm so proud, like the Ray Price City Lights and Steve's Tips of My Fingers and things. But every once in a while, you'll write one, and it'll come back home, and you say, did I really write that? I mean, they'll change it a lot.
Okay, so let's hear an example of that. And then we'll get your reaction, try to get you to remember how you first felt when you heard this. This is James Brown doing the recover of the same song, "Still." So there's another Georgia boy.
Just like I wrote it. I was so thrilled when I mean, number one, James Brown recording a Bill Anderson song. I mean, that's way outside the lines there. But I was so honored by that and so appreciative of it. And a little later on in the lyric, he actually even calls my name. He says, I learned this song from a good friend of mine, Brother Bill Anderson. And that just thrilled me to death.
And the song holds up. What do you think makes a good song? I mean, you must sit down and think to yourself, wow, this one that I've written is really good, and this one, it's okay. What makes those really great tunes?
The public. They tell you whether it's really great or not. You sit there. All you can do as a writer at the end of the day is to say, did I get everything out of that idea that was in there? Did I write it as well as it could be written? And then the rest of it is totally out of your hands. It's up to whoever finds it, whoever discovers it, whoever records it, whoever interprets it their own way. You really have very little, if any, control over that.
How do you know when to walk away from a song that you're writing?
If you look at it and you're satisfied that every little bit of it fits together as well as it can. I walk away from them. Here's what I do, and I've always done this. I will write one and get it as good as I think I can get it, and then I will put it away and not even look at it for maybe 3 or 4 weeks. I'll pull it out, and it's not really on my mind. It's fresh when I see it again after being away from it, and I look at it and I say, oh, that's pretty good. I did all right on this, or, oh, golly, why did I put it this way? Let's do it this way, or let's go back. Let's change this note. Let's change this chord pattern. Let's change this word in the song. I like to live with them. I don't turn them loose until I've had a chance to live with them a while.
If you're just joining us, my guest is country music legend Bill Anderson. His new memoir is called Whisperin' Bill Anderson, An Unprecedented Life in Country Music. If you have a favorite Bill Anderson tune, we want to hear from you. You can tweet us at OST Talk or join the conversation at Facebook. So I read that Trisha Yearwood, in her blurb for your book, said, I know Bill was born in South Carolina, but he was raised in Georgia, so I'll always own him as a Georgia boy. Is that how you think of yourself? Is that fair?
My favorite word there is boy. Well, of course, Trisha's from Monticello, Georgia, and she and I have known each other for a long, long time. She's a wonderful lady, and sure, I'm a Georgia boy. I mean, I was born in South Carolina, but my family left there when I was 8 years old, and we moved to Griffin and then to Decatur, and I went to the University of Georgia.
As a journalism major.
Well, I thought I wanted to be the world's greatest sports writer. I wanted to be Furman Bisher when I grew up. And I had the chance to tell him that one time, and I'm glad I did.
So what happened? I mean, because you tell the story in your memoir about sitting in your grandpapa's office, and he would install you there with a stack of paper and a typewriter, and you'd type away furiously all day. I mean, you seem to have been pretty passionate about it. What happened between that kid typing on that typewriter and the guy singing country songs at the Grand Ole Opry?
Well, he just grew up a little bit. I knew from the early part of my life I was going to do something that had to do with the creative arts. My loves were sports, writing, and music, country music. And I knew there was going to be some combination of that woven into my life, whether I'm a sports writer, whether I'm writing country songs, or what I'm doing. Those passions were inside of me, and I knew they were going to come out. I just didn't know in which form.
Let's hear you again. This is you singing the song Po' Folks, which you wrote in 1961. I'm told that this is the first one that really gave you an identity as a singer instead of just somebody who wrote tunes. And this is the one that led to your joining the cast of the Grand Ole Opry.
There's a whole lot of people looking down their noses at me, 'cause I didn't come from a wealthy family. There was 10 of us living in a two-room shack on the banks of the river by the railroad track. We kept chickens and a pen in the back, and everybody said we was poor folks. My daddy was a farmer, but all he ever raised was us. Dug a 40-foot well for a 36-gallon.
So you say in your memoir that you seem upset.
Where did you find that obscure recording?
I will never give our secrets away.
I never heard that before. Sounds nothing like the record.
Oh, really? You've never heard that recording before?
No, I've never heard that before. I don't know that I ever want to hear it again. But
come on now. Come on. But you say in the book that you seem to have this attraction to writing about big families living on farms, which was not your upbringing, correct?
No, it wasn't. But I have always kind of had that as a fantasy. I always thought how great it would be to have, you know, 8 or 10 brothers and sisters and just live out in the middle of the country somewhere and, you know, raise cows and horses and pigs and turnip greens and whatever. I don't know why I've always fantasized about that, but I have.
And you also point to your grandparents on the Anderson side as one of the main reasons why you're successful and became successful. Why is that?
Well, my granddaddy, or my grandpapa, as I called him, Anderson, down in Griffin, he was an old-time fiddle player. My grandmother was a little bit of a guitar picker and singer. My grandfather on the other side was a Methodist minister. And I think you put all of those things together and mix them up in a bowl, and Whisperin' Bill Anderson pops out, I guess, all those influences in my life.
Okay, so this particular memoir, as opposed to the first memoir written in the 80s, this is focused on the career, as you say, that came after you thought you were done. You were getting into the restaurant business, I think.
Mistake number one.
So what has changed? And especially in terms of co-writing, what has changed in your songwriting? What was difficult?
Well, it was a little difficult in the beginning to walk into a room with somebody else. Songwriting, as I said earlier, for me was kind of a lonely thing. It was something I did by myself. It was very introspective. And I wondered for years, in fact, I doubted for years that I could write with somebody else, that I could walk in at 10 o'clock in the morning and sit down and say, okay, let's pour our heart into this song. And then when I found out I could, it opened up this whole new world. I found out there's people out there just as crazy as I am. See, a lot of times I'd sit down to write a song and I'd write the second verse first. And I thought, nobody does that. Let me tell you something, everybody does that. And I find out that these other artists and young writers and people, you know, they like to draw from my influences. I love to draw from theirs. They had a whole different set of influences from those that I had. And I love sharing mine with them and I love them sharing theirs with me.
That is country music veteran, legend, Bill Anderson. His memoir is called Whisperin' Bill Anderson, An Unprecedented Life in Country Music, and he'll perform at the Social Circle Theater in Social Circle, Georgia, this Thursday night at 7. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. You definitely did your homework, and I appreciate that.
That's what they pay me to do. We definitely want to hear about your favorite Bill Anderson tunes. There are so many of them that I'm sure one of them strikes your fancy. You can call us at 404-500-9457 and sing it for us, of course. Or you can tweet us at OST Talk or post on Facebook. For today, that is On Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Celeste Headley. Have a great day.